Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. The Obama administration has challenged federal agencies and operations to become more transparent, participatory, and collaborative. The U.S. General Services Administration plays an integral role in making such aspirations real. We'll explore this and more with our guest, David McClure, Associate Administrator, Office of Citizen Services and Communications at the U.S. General Services Administration. Dave, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Also joining our conversation from IBM is Ken Beecher. Ken, welcome.
Thanks.
Let's start off. Could you give us a sense of the history and mission of the General Services Administration?
I'd be glad to. You know, it's an interesting agency in the federal government. It was actually born after the conclusion of World War II. It had responsibilities for disposing of the war surplus, inherited responsibilities for managing a lot of the public buildings, and also began running some of the acquisition processes for government. So it morphed into what it is today. If you see it, GSA today, people think of two things when they think of GSA: public building service. We manage the inventory of public buildings around the country, build, own, lease, manage that. The other big function at GSA has been the acquisition service. So we procure billions of dollars in supplies, services for the federal government centrally to bring some efficiencies to how government makes those purchases. And then we have a wide range of staff offices and smaller offices, one of which is mine in the Office of Citizen Services and Communications. So GSA has quite an interesting footprint in that it's a government-wide type of servicing agency.
Operationally, what's the size of its budget and geographical footprint, if you will?
Well, it has about 12,000 employees, so it's not a small place. We're geographically dispersed all around the country. It's a highly decentralized, very diversified office, has a footprint, obviously, in D.C., but because of the functions of GSA, we're geographically around the country.
Now that you've given us a sense of the larger organization, what about your specific area as the Associate Administrator for the Office of Citizen Services and Communications? What are your specific roles and responsibilities? How is your office organized?
Yeah, it's again, another byproduct of some change at GSA. The Office of Citizen Services and Communications was actually created in 2002. It came out of the Office of Government-Wide Policy and was combined with the Office of Communications. So there was a desire to focus on service delivery to citizens. If you remember back in 2000, 2001, FirstGov, the first portal for the U.S. government, nationwide portal, was created. That has morphed into USA.gov, as we call it now, and that is a primary responsibility of this office, is to run this electronic front door for the federal government. We actually provide links to state and local governments as well. Where do citizens go to get services for passports, for veterans benefits, for Social Security benefits? How do you get a driver's license renewed? So it's quite a centralized repository of direct contact with citizens and directing them to information and services as efficiently as we possibly can. That's been the cornerstone of that office. We also run the 1-800-FED-INFO, or the National Contact Center for the federal government. Any citizen wants to dial in and ask a question about problem, help, where do I go to get X, Y, or Z, the National Contact Center is there taking phone calls on behalf of the entire federal government and will spin them off to an agency if they need specific help with a process problem or service delivery problem. That contact center lights up during national emergencies. Katrina, any kind of natural disaster, that thing lights up with activity. And we often take on the additional responsibility, like if a FEMA is overloaded with calls, we'll pick up capacity and actually begin answering calls on behalf of these other agencies. Or if they want a emergency contract put in place just to beef up the ability to answer questions, we'll handle that contract for them. And then the third piece of Citizen Services has been the print distribution center in Pueblo, Colorado. If you ever have ordered a government publication, it will come out of Pueblo, and we run that print publication operation as well.
Well, I just had a follow-up because I wanted to know, what's a day in the life of the associate administrator for this particular
office? Chaotic. Yeah, so running all of that, you know, is very operational, and I don't actually get involved in the day-to-day operational aspects of that. We are redesigning the website, you know, USAGov, so we've been heavily involved in upgrading and thinking about new functionality to add to that. I've asked people in the office to think about integrating information across those three channels of service delivery. So if I call or I contact by web or I get something in writing from the publication center, how do we connect all that information so it's the same information? So that's another piece. The other thing that I've brought into the job is new responsibilities. So we're running a lot of the e-government initiatives on behalf of OMB, which are very much citizen-facing, and trying to move government rapidly into the Web 2.0 new media space. So I have a whole sub-office that I've created that's focused on putting tools in place to get agencies communicating with citizens in dialogues, public interaction sessions. We have an open government directive that's moving government rapidly into transparency. So the office is playing a really critical role in several very high-powered initiatives in that area as well.
Regarding your roles and responsibilities, what are your three top challenges that you face, and how are you addressing these challenges?
Yeah, well, that's a great question, and I had to think about that a moment. When I got into, you know, I was in government for a while, I went to the private sector, I'm back in government, and obviously you go through that period of readjustment because commercial and public sector definitely have similarities, but they have a great deal of differences. So the three challenges I'm faced with every day is matching the right people to the work. Just because they hold a particular position or job doesn't necessarily mean they're the best person for a specific thing that we need to do. You can ask people that work for me. The first thing I did was begin shaking the tree a little bit and moving people around, giving them new opportunities, moving them into different lines of work so that I could capitalize on their interest and their skills and their capability. So I think that's a big challenge. The second challenge is managing expectations. There is so much on our plate, and the time frames are very short that we've constantly trying to keep the pace quick, but we also have to manage the expectations of the White House or OMB, our own leadership, on in terms of what we can deliver without overselling, overpromising, so we don't lose confidence. I feel lucky. I think we have a high level of confidence in what we're doing because we move quickly and we have been delivering, so that's a good thing. And the third challenge I've discovered is just the work of government is still so focused on meetings, face-to-face, in the room, around the table. And it is necessary for some things, but not necessary for others. So I find the challenge of moving us into this online collaboration and moving us into workflow that's very lightweight, that's problem solving, get things done, move on, is challenging in government because we're just not accustomed to operating that way.
Well, let's take a quick step back. This isn't your first stop as a public servant. Can you describe your career path for our listeners and, you know, how did you begin your career?
I actually showed up by accident in Washington. I was destined to become a college professor. I had a degree in public policy and public administration. I, at the last minute, applied for the presidential management program, went through the interview process and said, well, maybe I should go to Washington and actually get inside of government. And that was in 1983. I liked what I saw. It was very fascinating to be inside the government, actually doing things. I ended up staying at GAO for about 18 years because GAO provides you a snapshot, a view of government that you could get nowhere else. Literally worked on everything from DOD, Intel, to environment, to national parks. I don't think there was any agency or department I really didn't have some insights into from a policy perspective. And then I rapidly saw the intersection between information technology and public policy. In about 1988-89, I went into the information management component of GAO and started running information management and policy reviews. I just found that fascinating work, created what we called GAO best practices reports. Everybody's used to getting the blue-covered reports from GAO, which are scathing, telling you what all your problems are, and not happy campers. So I introduced a new series in GAO, the Red Series, which has nothing to do with auditing. It's going out and finding leading commercial public sector practices and publishing those and then trying to influence legislation, which we did with the Clinger-Cohen Act, trying to influence how OMB carries out its oversight through executives and presidential orders, and then recalibrating the audit evaluation process so that it's focused on a regimented set of principles and practices so that when you went in and evaluated somebody against that, they went, yeah, that makes sense. That's what we should be doing. And you didn't get into this tug of war. So I, you know, stayed at GAO 18 years. I probably could have stayed there my entire government career, but I always said, gee, it'd be nice to go on the other side of the fence and maybe see what it's like. And I jumped out to a nonprofit, the Council for Excellence in Government, for a couple of years and ran their e-government program and leadership training. Went over to Gartner as an analyst and then managing the global government research agenda and got to travel around the world, interacting with governments all around the world and learning about our problems in the U.S. were not unique. Everyone in the world actually struggles with a lot of these important IT delivery questions. So at some point in time, somebody knocked on my door and said, would you like to come back in the government? Martha Johnson, the current administrator, and I had breakfast, and she said, would you like to come back in? I was not looking for it. It's just one of those points in time where the roads kind of split. I said, I think that might be cool because I had worked on the transition team for the Obama administration, thought it was a unique period in time. Great opportunity, fast-moving agenda. She said, sure. So back in.
Well, given your wealth of experience, both private and public sector, what makes an effective leader in an increasingly interconnected and networked world?
A good leader is a good listener. I think to be effective in today's environment, particularly as we move more and more to online communication and collaboration, the challenge for a leader in government is actually to be comfortable in that environment, that you allow employees to interact with you directly, that you run open, transparent conversations and meetings, and we don't have a hierarchical chain of command. And so I run a very flat organization. My door is always open to anybody that works for me, from a lowest GS level up to my deputies. And I believe in having that openness in hearing direct feedback, giving advice, setting the tone when necessary. But I think we've moved into a very fluid, agile working environment that requires leaders to pay a lot of attention to the interaction and communications of leadership in a very dynamic way.
What about the Open Government Directive? We will ask David McClure, Associate Administrator of the Office of Citizen Services and Communications within the U.S. General Services Administration, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.